I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. Trump and Trump-leaning undecideds, 50. Biden and Biden-leaning undecideds, 50. In the Harvard-Harris poll, the Harvard-Harris poll about which a Harvard School newspaper columnist wrote on Tuesday, Harvard should break up with the Harris poll because the university is, quote, lending its name to a methodologically flawed poll that often promotes a right-wing political agenda. So forget the Olbermann caveat numbers of undecideds and margins of error. The Harris poll itself leans right, yet even it has this race a tie. And moreover, with the spoiler candidates and with the undecideds undecided, it has it 40-37 Trump and the 8% undecided leaning 61% to Biden, including 58% of independent undecideds and 41% of Republican undecideds. And that is, after all, exactly what the Biden internal metrics told the president's campaign months ago. And that is exactly why they did not panic when everybody else panicked, because they stuck to the mantra that the minute Trump actually got the Republican nomination, the undecideds and the independents would have their oh spit moment and break for Biden. Even in the right-leaning Harvard-Harris poll, or as it is colloquially referred to, the Mark Penn personal vendetta poll. And in the Bloomberg Morning Consult poll of swing states, which was the talk of politics when Trump was ahead everywhere, but it is not the talk of politics at this moment, because in the new one, Biden went up in 6 out of the 7 states, leading in Wisconsin, tied in Michigan, tied in Pennsylvania, -2 in Nevada. So if you looked askance at last night's fundraiser down the block from me at Radio City, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and the $25 million money bomb expected from the simultaneous appearance of Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton, don't look askance. How much would you pay to not live under a Trump dictatorship? More to the point, if the Harvard-Harris poll is sketchy at best, then its rationales are sketchy at best. But Harvard-Harris said it saw no bump after Biden's State of the Union, but it did see a bump after Biden's first wall-to-wall ad blitz. And yes, it's the economy, or more correctly, the perception of the economy. And yes, you should be able to win a campaign against a lunatic whose brain is leaking out of his ears and is running on a platform of fascism, despotism, revenge, a national abortion ban, and cutting Social Security and Medicare. But in point of fact, you will only win such a campaign if you flood all media with proof that Trump is a fascist bent on revenge and a national abortion ban and severing the safety net. And that is called advertising. Wish it were otherwise, but it ain't. By the way, if you were waiting for RFK Jr. to self-destruct, he just gave you some of the ammunition. This money spigot he named as his running mate, the Shanahan, she is against in vitro fertilization. She revealed this the same day that Democrat Marilyn Lands, who lost Alabama State House District 10 by 7 points in 2022, she won it by 25 points, running on a platform to protect in vitro fertilization Tuesday. As a bonus, the Shanahan part of the RFK Jr. Shanahan ticket is not only anti-in vitro, but believes IVF can easily be replaced because 2 hours of exposure to morning sunshine can make women pregnant, and now you know why Crazy Bob Jr. picked her besides all her money. She makes him look less insane. But, memo to the Biden campaign, you are going to have to spend some of that advertising money telling the uninformed and the disconnected that RFK is so brain damaged that he does not remember all those times when he came out against all vaccines, and his running mate is such a ditz. She called IVF a lie and said this at a conference last year.
Interventions that cost no money. And one of those is sunlight. I'm not sure that there has been a really thorough, like, mitochondrial respiration study on the effects of 2 hours of morning sunlight on reproductive health. I would love to fund something like that. Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. I just have an intuition that could be interesting.
It's on YouTube. Her intuition. President's Forum Revolutionizing Women's Health 2023 NAM Annual Meeting. And it's about an hour, 29 minutes and 17 seconds in, about sunlight and her intuition about sunlight. All you have to do is dub it from YouTube and add at the beginning the part about her calling IVF a lie. And then at the end, you add, I'm Joe Biden and I approve this message because the RFK Shanahan ticket is meshuga. You're welcome. By the way, what did Trump do yesterday? He was also in New York to exploit the murder of a city cop who was killed with an illegal gun so he can try to get elected dictator. And he exploited the murder so he could raise money and do an interview with Fox in the plane on the way to the funeral and, of course, make the funeral about him. And he attacked the daughter of Judge Merchan again, this time naming her, but dropping the reference to the social media account he falsely claimed was hers, a claim that was disproved Wednesday. Trump issued a statement apologizing for his lie. Who am I kidding? He's never apologized for anything in his life. And if he started now, he would never have a moment left on this earth to spend doing anything else. Judge Merchan's daughter should sue him for defamation. Speaking of Meshuggah, the network I invented continues to be more entertaining now than at any other point since January 2011. Of course, now it, MSNBC, and NBC News are getting help on this front from the RNC, the Republican National Committee, or if you prefer, the new acronym for Rana's Now Cool. Timeline: Trump and the RNC fire Ronna McDaniel. Then NBC hires Ronna McDaniel. Then NBC fires Ronna McDaniel. Then Trump and the RNC make a martyr out of Ronna McDaniel. The RNC is, per Politico, quote, weighing whether to restrict NBC's access to this summer's Republican convention. Quote, we are taking a hard look at what this means for NBC's participation at the convention, says a spokesperson. Okay, how would How would limiting NBC's access to the RNC bullshit festival, how would that hurt NBC? I mean, the year that basketball's Los Angeles Clippers won 12 games and lost 70 games, they banned me from covering their games or going to their practices because they didn't like what I said about them on television. And I actually wrote the president of the Clippers a letter asking sincerely why he thought this would accomplish anything other than to make me the envy of every other sports reporter in Los Angeles. I am well aware that nobody at NBC can say this, but certainly there must still be some people there who at least understand this. Republicans may watch the NBC remake of Night Court, or the NBC remake of Quantum Leap, or the NBC remake of Gunsmoke, or whatever other remakes they have on the TV network these days, because TV has not had a new idea since 1993. But they do not, Republicans do not watch NBC Nightly News. They do not watch Meet the Press. They would not watch Meet the Press if you had made Ronna McDaniel the host. Before she was fired, they had branded her a rhino, a failure, a never-Trumper. They made jokes about her appearance, her weight, her makeup. Republicans checked out of NBC News long ago. They checked out long before I got there, and I got there 27 years ago this October. They checked out long before Tim Russert got there. They are not NBC's audience. And NBC, if the Republican National Committee threatens to punish you over firing their current enemy number one, oh no, correcting that, she has been recast and upgraded to their current martyr number one. If they threaten to punish you by keeping you out of their convention, the correct answer is, how can we help? Why the networks don't understand this remains a mystery to me. Even reading the equivalent of the post-accident reports about the Ronna hiring-firing crash at NBC as issued by the National Media Safety Board after they recovered NBC's black box from where Cesar Conde's brain is supposed to be, I still didn't get it. And then, as I often do in such mental stalemates, I crashed two stories together just to see what would happen. And the other one was courtesy of Judd Legum's Popular Information, a wonderful news site, a great resource. And his piece yesterday just happened to total up all of the corporate contributions to the campaigns of election deniers. Election deniers like Ronna McDaniel, election deniers like Trump, election deniers that after January 6th, the corporations had vowed to never support again. They had literally, each of these corporations said they would never donate to anti-democracy election deniers campaigns again. Well, never turns out to be a relative term. The total, instead of being what they said it was going to be, zero, the total is $23 million in just over 3 years. It's startling, but again, it's American business people. And also, again, Biden raised more than that last night. What's really informative and really stands out is the company-by-company totals, and this is all at Legum's site, Popular Information, and maybe you want to boycott these companies, and I'm stripping out the obviously theocratic ones like Koch Industries. You ready? AT&T vowed never to do this again. $1,200,000 in donations to election deniers. Does that nice Lily from the commercials, that arch-liberal actress, does she know about this? AT&T, which vowed never to donate to election deniers again, has donated $1,000,000 in campaign donations to election deniers. UPS, $926,000. Lockheed Martin, hello, $870,000. Home Depot, $862,000. Charter Communications, that's Time Warner Cable, $848,000. Boeing, $813,000. Well, now you know why they didn't have the money to put in all the doors they should have. Boeing spent it on election deniers. Comcast, $787,500. Wait a minute. Comcast? Comcast? NBC? Comcast? The leading donor to election-denying campaigns among companies that own TV networks and vowed never to donate to election deniers' campaigns but did anyway. The leading donor is Comcast? The people who just hired Ronna McDaniel? I mean, the next TV programming company on this list is Cox, 357,000. They're only 29th on this list. Comcast is 8th. So, there you have it. NBC's news executives, who damn well know that they need to make it look like they care what MAGAs think of them, but that nothing they will ever do will ever make MAGAs think well of them or actually look at them. They hire an election denier, an election denial conspirator, and of course their bosses in Comcast knew nothing about it. News chairman Cesar Conde, who wants to be chairman of NBC Universal itself, did not boast to Brian Roberts of Comcast that he was going to hire Ronna McDaniel. No, of course not. And of course it never dawned on them that the folks right above them and right below them on this contributions list, AT&T, UPS, Home Depot, Valero, Energy, Marathon, Oil, FedEx, United Health, Walmart, Delta, Toyota, GM, Verizon, Chevron, and Aflac. It never dawned on them that those companies are also advertisers or would-be advertisers on NBC outlets. No! Of course not! The hiring of Ronna McDaniel and the fact that when she had already become a dead pundit walking by Sunday afternoon, that when that happened, the person that NBC's vice president for political coverage, Carrie Budoff Brown, called for help to gin up outrage in McDaniel's defense, the person she called was the former McDaniel chief of staff at the Republican National Committee, and the weapon she reportedly gave that guy was, remember to point out that Jen Psaki is on MSNBC, and that's okay, but suddenly Ronna McDaniel isn't. Okay, even though on the both sides-ism and the whataboutism scales, they're exactly the same thing, even though they're anything but the same thing? Yeah, it's all just a coincidence. No doubt. Back on the ground at the NBC continuing fluster cluck, not getting any leaks out of editorial president Rebecca Blumenstein's triage meeting at the NBC News Washington Bureau yesterday, which lends credence, since there have been no leaks about Blumenstein in any of this, but there have been too many to count about Ronna, about Cesar Conde, about Carrie Budoff Brown, about Rashida Jones, about Kristen Welker, since all of the leaks have been about them and none of them have been about Blumenstein, this lends credence to a theory that only really smart people could understand, that all the leaks are coming from Blumenstein. This tidbit is echoing that McDaniel not only wants the whole of the $600K NBC offered her for 2 years, and her part in this arrangement was to say, okay, where do I sign? NBC has no argument against that. But McDaniel continues to leak that there's more now. She's exploring potential defamation and hostile work environment suits because of what was said about her on MSNBC. Now, somebody has to take her aside and say, you got paid 600 grand for literally 20 minutes work. Also, you can only sue for defamation if what they said about you is not true. See how this works? We do have two delightful sidebars, though. The first courtesy of the Washington Post on Monday, when she found out from her agent at the CAA agency that NBC was probably going to fire her, so he was dropping her as a client. That, apparently, was the first time Ronna McDaniel realized that her agent also represented other people at NBC. Surprise! And I mentioned yesterday that of the four NBC News executives likeliest to get fricasseed over this continuing disaster, Conde, Jones, Blumenstein, and Budoff Brown is also presumably on the ropes in her other role as chair of the board of directors of the International Center for Journalists. Little did I know that Ms. Blumenstein is also a chair. She is chair of the It Thinks Very Highly of Itself Columbia Journalism Review. Well, at least she was chair when I wrote this. I haven't been able to check the internet in 20 minutes. Also of interest here, he is a member of the Michigan State Legislature, and he put up a picture of a bus at the Detroit airport, and he said they were illegal invaders getting a police escort, and it turned out they were one of the teams playing in the Sweet 16 stage at the NCAA basketball championship. And the guy still doesn't believe this is true. Also, Charlie Kirk attacks Larry David for being too New York. Guess what that's a euphemism for? That's next. This is Countdown.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann. Olbermann.
On this edition of Countdown, Fridays with Thurber. There really isn't a Thurber story that fits in with the presidential polls or with the farce at NBC, except maybe how to relax while broadcasting. On the other hand, if there's one thing Ronna McDaniel is not going to have to worry about anytime soon, it's how to relax while broadcasting. How to relax while sitting on top a pile of $600,000 in small bills. So instead, we'll just go to one of Thurber's classics, Life at Ohio State University a Century Ago, and how it felt for a one-eyed botany student who couldn't see a damn thing in the microscope. University Days by James Thurber, next. First, still some more idiots to talk about. The Daily Roundup, the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. And we have a theme warning this time around. See if you can figure out what the theme is before I get to the winner. First, the bronze. Worse. I'll cite a full-on racist Nazi Twitter account called I Am Yes You Are No, with 277,000 followers and not a peep out of the white supremacist Elon Musk, but it could have been almost anybody on Twitter, it seems. First in this sequence, Maria Bartiromo, who is also a white supremacist and incidentally possibly the worst advertisement for her own bias. Where's the supremacist part? She insisted that the Baltimore Bridge collapsed because of wide open borders. Each day since, she has hosted some Trump Nazi to argue against spending federal money on rebuilding the bridge. And then, of course, the next stage of this will be complaints about the supply chain being blocked. Anyway, now Twitter is burning up with blame for the mayor of Baltimore, Brandon Scott, because he's black. That one Twitter account I referenced wrote, "This is Baltimore's DEI mayor commenting on the bridge. It's going to get so much worse. Prepare accordingly." That tweet and others have been community noted. The mayor won election in Baltimore by 70% of the vote in 2020, compared to 7% for the Republican. But so what? The slur is at 26 million views and counting. At least Mayor Scott is telling it like it is, quoting him. "We know what these folks really want to say when they say DEI mayor. They really want to say the N-word." Unquote. Trump has given them license to. Musk has given them a platform to. The runner-up, worser, Charlie Kirk, as an aside. Honestly, is there an actual medical condition wherein the head slowly inflates like a balloon? I'm not talking Barry Bonds and human growth hormone. I'm talking like Terry Gilliam's opening credits to Monty Python's Flying Circus, where there's a guy's head and a guy next to it with a bicycle pump, and he keeps hitting the bicycle pump, and the guy's head gets larger and larger and then bursts. I'm waiting for this with Charlie Kirk, though I doubt it will actually happen. Anywho, this was as predictable as rain. Larry David, our announcer today, that was him doing his impression of the late Yankee Stadium PA guy Bob Shepard. Larry David savaged Trump in an interview with CNN in the way that only Larry can. Now, he's not a close friend of mine. I'm not going to make that boast, but I've had the joy of meals with him, and we trade emails, and he's not the guy you see on TV. He's a warm, generous man, and like all great humorists, he is the easiest audience in the world. If a nitwit like me says something halfway funny, he roars. I thought he was going to fall off the chair at lunch the one time. Loves to laugh. Bring your B-minus material. He's on the floor. Anyway, I mentioned that, so if you've ever seen his evisceration of Trump, or you go check it out now, you will appreciate that it sounds like the Larry David of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's surgery without anesthesia. And it's when Larry's really mad that it gets like that in real life. And that, by the way, is that's the debate I want to see. I want to see Larry David against Trump. When that was over, they'd have to carry Trump off the stage in a bucket. Anyway, Larry shreds Trump on Wednesday, and then on Thursday, the giant inflating head Charlie Kirk says, "I never liked Larry David. He's not the brains of the operation of Seinfeld. He's your typical kind of New York Woody Allen type that is constantly complaining." Well, hold on. First, Charlie Kirk's show is complaining. His political philosophy is complaining. His party is complaining. January 6th was complaining. If Trump stopped complaining, he'd stop breathing. Charlie Kirk's life is complaining. Secondly, not the brains, typical kind of New York Woody Allen type, constantly complaining. Charlie Kirk means Jewish. Just say Jewish. In fact, Woody Allen made this exact reference in one of his films. I think Nick Fuentes should get the Cask of Amontillado treatment, but I respect him more than I respect Charlie Kirk. I mean, these are both not measurable totals. It's like 1/3 millionth of an inch. But I respect him more than I respect Charlie Kirk because they're both anti-Semites, but Fuentes doesn't pretend he hates Jews because they remind him of New York. Fuentes says he hates Jews. Kirk says, "He's not the brains of the operation in Seinfeld." Well, okay, Charlie, who is? Is it Jerry? Is it Jerry Seinfeld? Charlie, I got some bad news for you about Jerry Seinfeld. Christ. But our winner, Matt Maddox, the singular form of Maddox, I guess, a Michigan State representative, first words in his bio are, "Trump endorsed." Wife was one of the fake electors. They were at January 6th, but they claimed they couldn't get in, which is the best story I heard all day. Has no neck, is a bail bondsman.
Moscone, bail bonds. And what has Trump endorsed Matt Maddock, the bail bondsman, contributed today to life's rich pageant? He has posted two photos from the Detroit airport. They look like they were taken by somebody who had illegally breached a secure area, by the way. One is of a plane. The other is of three buses. And Matt Maddock has added, quote, happening right now. Three buses just loaded up with illegal invaders at Detroit Metro. Anyone have any idea where they're headed with their police escort? Turns out, in fact, most people who read that did know where they were headed and who they were, even if Matt was unable to escape his paranoid delusion. The buses with the police escort were headed to Detroit's Little Caesars Arena because they were filled not with illegal invaders, but with the Gonzaga University basketball team playing Purdue in the Sweet 16 of March Madness tonight, 7:39 p.m. tip-off Eastern. And a lot of people told Matt Maddock bail bonds about this fact, and he responded to them with the same answer time and time again. Nice cover story, commie. Commie with a K. Did I mention Matt drives a church bus for a teen ministry? At least he says that's why he's driving teens around. Anyway, Matt is unconvinced. The way Charlie Kirk wants to punish Larry David for criticizing Trump. The way they're calling Brendan Scott a DEI mayor. Because these guys are white trash. I check for drug use, too. Opioids, probably. These guys act like people do when they're on opioids. And that universal sense we all had of, I shouldn't do this, I might get caught. That gets shut off, as opioids will do to you. There's also some chance of PTSD or traumatic brain damage. But underlying it all, they're white trash. But if you guess that white trash was the theme, not quite. It dawned on me as I sat down to write, and I looked at all of these stories and all the other stories like them in the last days, weeks, years, decades, the increasingly crazy things they do and say, that it suddenly becomes way easier to understand them, to understand MAGA, to understand Trump, to understand this whole racism is the new tolerance mindset. If you remember that it is psychologically adjacent to mass shooters. I mean, think about it. The blind hate, the belief you can do anything and get away with it, the desire to inflict mass harm, usually a target, some minority group or special category of people, a conviction that they're entitled to do this, and of course, insanity that can be hidden just long enough that they don't get committed in time. Not meaning anybody in particular, but think of all these right-wingers and MAGAs and Trump and people who have their own websites. Think of them not as would-be mass murderers, but as psychologically adjacent to them. And suddenly it's all a lot clearer. And while it is much more disturbing this way, it is always better to see and understand the menace for what it really is and not for the simpler thing that we wish it were. So, have a nice day after that. And then back to the original topic here. Matt, Gonzaga's in California. That means I was right. They are invaders. Maddock, bail bonds. 2 days. Worst person in the world.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
The closest thing James Thurber ever wrote to a novel was the story of his childhood, somewhat exaggerated, or according to his family, almost completely exaggerated. It was called My Life and Hard Times. In it are stories like The Night the Bed Fell, and such as that. But my favorite, perhaps, of all of his stories from his supposed youth is called University Days. There's a lot of, well, you'll hear. There's a lot of stuff in University Days, and so I present it to you for the first time on Fridays with Thurber. University Days by James Thurber. I passed all the other courses that I took at my university, but I could never pass botany. This was because all botany students had to spend several hours a week in a laboratory looking through a microscope at plant cells, and I could never see through a microscope. I never once saw a cell through a microscope. This used to enrage my instructor. He would wander around the laboratory, pleased with the progress all the students were making in drawing the involved and, so I am told, interesting structure of flower cells, until he came to me. I would just be standing there. "I can't see anything," I would say. He would begin patiently enough, explaining how anybody can see through a microscope, but he would always end up in a fury, claiming that I could too see through a microscope, but just pretended that I couldn't. "It takes away from the beauty of flowers anyway," I used to tell him. "We are not concerned with the beauty in this course," he would say. "We are concerned solely with what I may call the mechanics of flowers." "Well," I'd say, "I can't see anything." "Try it just once again," he'd say, and I would put my eye to the microscope and see nothing at all, except now and again a nebulous, milky substance, a phenomenon of maladjustment. You were supposed to see a vivid, restless clockwork of sharply defined plant cells. "I see what looks like a lot of milk," I would tell him. This, he claimed, was the result of my not having adjusted the microscope properly, so he would readjust it for me, or rather for himself, and I would look again and see milk. I finally took a deferred pass, as they called it, and waited a year and tried again. You had to pass one of the biological sciences, or you couldn't graduate. The professor had come back from vacation brown as a berry, bright-eyed and eager to explain cell structure again to his classes. "Well," he said to me cheerily when we met in the laboratory, first hour of the semester, "we're going to see cells this time, aren't we?" "Yes, sir," I said. Students to right of me and to left of me and in front of me were seeing cells. What's more, they were quietly drawing pictures of them in their notebooks. Of course, I didn't see anything. "We'll try it," the professor said to me gently, "with every adjustment of the microscope known to man. As God is my witness, I'll arrange this glass so that you see cells through it, or I'll give up teaching. In 22 years of botany, I..." He cut off abruptly, for he was beginning to quiver all over like Lionel Barrymore. And he genuinely wished to hold on to his temper. His scenes with me had taken a great deal out of him. As an editor's note here, if you don't recognize the name Lionel Barrymore, if you've ever seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life, Mr. Potter, the evil financier in the wheelchair, that was played by Lionel Barrymore, who used to quiver all over. Back to Thurber. So we tried it with every adjustment of the microscope known to man. With only one of them did I see anything but blackness, or the familiar lacteal opacity, and that time I saw, to my pleasure and amazement, a variegated constellation of flecks, specks, and dots. These I hastily drew. The instructor, noting my activity, came back from an adjoining desk, a smile on his lips, his eyebrows high in hope. He looked at my cell drawing. "What's that?" he demanded with a hint of squeal in his voice. "That's what I saw," I said. "You didn't! You didn't! You didn't!" he screamed, losing control of his temper instantly, and he bent over and squinted into the microscope. His head snapped up. "That's your eye!" he shouted. "You've fixed the lens so that it reflects. You've drawn your eye!" Another course that I didn't like, but somehow managed to pass, was economics. I went to that class straight from the botany class, which didn't help me any in understanding either subject. I used to get them mixed up. But not as mixed up as another student in my economics class who came there direct from a physics laboratory. He was a tackle on the football team named Balencewicz. At the time, Ohio State University had one of the best football teams in the country, and Balencewicz was one of its outstanding stars. In order to be eligible to play, it was necessary for him to keep up in his studies, a very difficult matter, for while he was not dumber than an ox, he was not any smarter. Most of his professors were lenient and helped him along. None gave him more hints in answering questions or asked him simpler ones than the economics professor, a thin, timid man named Bassam. One day when we were on the subject of transportation and distribution, it became Balencewicz's turn to answer a question. "Name one means of transportation," the professor said to him. No light came into the big tackle's eyes. "Just any means of transportation," said the professor. Balencewicz sat staring at him. "That is," pursued the professor, "any medium, agency, or method of going from one place to another." Balencewicz had the look of a man who is being led into a trap. "You may choose among steam, horse-drawn, or electrically propelled vehicles," said the instructor. "I might suggest the one which we commonly take in making long journeys across land." There was a profound silence in which everybody stirred uneasily, including Balencewicz and Mr. Bassam. Mr. Bassam abruptly broke this silence in an amazing manner. "Choo, choo, choo," he said in a low voice and turned instantly scarlet. He glanced appealingly around the room. All of us, of course, shared Mr. Bassam's desire that Balencewicz would stay abreast of the class in economics, for the Illinois game, one of the hardest and most important of the season, was only a week off. "Toot, toot, toot," some student with a deep voice moaned, and we all looked encouragingly at Balencewicz. Somebody else gave a fine imitation of a locomotive letting off steam. Mr. Bassam himself rounded off the little show. "Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong," he said hopefully. Balencewicz was staring at the floor now, trying to think, his great brow furrowed, his huge hands rubbing together, his face red. "How did you come to college this year, Mr. Balencewicz?" asked the professor. "Chuffa, chuffa, 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 chuffa."
"My father sent me," said the football player.
What
on? Asked Bassam. I get an allowance, said the tackle, in a low, husky voice, obviously embarrassed. No, said Bassam. Name a means of transportation. What did you ride here on?
Train,
said Balensiewicz. Quite right, said the professor. Now, Mr. Nugent, will you tell us? If I went through anguish in botany and economics for different reasons, gymnasium work was even worse. I don't even like to think about it. They wouldn't let you play games or join in the exercises with your glasses on, and I couldn't see with mine off. I bumped into professors, horizontal bars, agricultural students, swinging iron rings. Not being able to see, I could take it, but I couldn't dish it out. Also, in order to pass gymnasium, and you had to pass it to graduate, you had to learn to swim if you didn't know how. I didn't like the swimming pool. I didn't like swimming. And I didn't like the swimming instructor. And after all these years, I still don't. I never swam, but I passed my gym work anyway by having another student give my gymnasium number, 978, and swim across the pool in my place. He was a quiet, amiable, blonde youth, number 473, and he would have seen through a microscope for me if we could have gotten away with that, but we couldn't get away with that. Another thing I didn't like about gymnasium work was that they made you strip the day you registered. It is impossible for me to be happy when I am stripped and being asked a lot of questions. Still, I did better than a lanky agricultural student who was cross-examined just before I was. They asked each student what college he was in, that is, whether arts, engineering, commerce, or agriculture. What college are you in? The instructor snapped at the youth in front of me. Ohio State University, he said promptly. It wasn't that agricultural student, but it was another, a whole lot like him, who decided to take up journalism, possibly on the ground that when farming went to hell, he could fall back on newspaper work. He didn't realize, of course, that that would be very much like falling back full length on a kit of carpenter's tools. Haskins didn't seem cut out for journalism, being too embarrassed to talk to anybody and unable to use a typewriter, but the editor of the college paper assigned him to the cow barns, the sheep house, the horse pavilion, and the animal husbandry department generally. This was a genuinely big beat, for it took up 5 times as much ground and got 10 times as great a legislative appropriation as the College of Liberal Arts. The agricultural student knew animals, but nevertheless his stories were dull and colorlessly written. He took all afternoon on each of them on account of having to hunt for each letter on the typewriter. Once in a while, he had to ask somebody to help him hunt. C and L in particular were hard letters for him to find. His editor finally got pretty much annoyed at the farmer journalist because his pieces were so uninteresting. See here, Haskins, he snapped at him one day. Why is it we never have anything hot from you on the horse pavilion? Here we have 200 head of horses on this campus, more than any other university in the Western Conference except Purdue. And yet you never get any real lowdown on them. Now, shoot over to the horse barns and dig up something lively. Haskins shambled out and came back in about an hour. He said he had something. Well, tart it off snappily, said the editor. Something people will read. Haskins set to work and in a couple of hours brought a sheet of typewritten paper to the desk. It was a 200-word story about some disease that had broken out among the horses. Its opening sentence was simple but arresting. It read, "Who has noticed the sores on the tops of the horses in the animal husbandry building?" Ohio State was a land-grant university, and therefore 2 years of military drill was compulsory. We drilled with old Springfield rifles and studied the tactics of the Civil War, even though the World War was going on at the time. At 11 o'clock each morning, thousands of freshmen and sophomores used to deploy over the campus, moodily creeping up on the old chemistry building. It was good training for the kind of warfare that was waged at Shiloh, but it had no connection with what was going on in Europe. Some people used to think that there was German money behind it. But they didn't dare say that, or they would have been thrown in jail as German spies.
It was a period of muddy thought and marked, I believe, the decline of higher education in the Middle West. As a soldier, I was never any good at all. Most of the cadets were glumly indifferent soldiers, but I was no good at all. Once, General Littlefield, who was commandant of the cadet corps, popped up in front of me during regimental drill and snapped, "You are the main trouble with this university!" I think he meant that my type was the main trouble with the university, but he may have meant me individually. I was mediocre at drill, certainly. That is, until my senior year. By that time, I had drilled longer than anybody else in the Western Conference, having failed at military at the end of each preceding year, so that I had to do it all over again. I was the only senior still in uniform. The uniform, which when new had made me look like an interurban railway conductor, now that it had become faded and too tight, made me look like Bert Williams in his bellboy act. This had a definitely bad effect on my morale. Even so, I had become by sheer practice little short of wonderful at squad maneuvers. One day, General Littlefield picked our company out of the whole regiment and tried to get it mixed up by putting it through one movement after another as fast as we could execute them. Squads right, squads left, squads on right into line, squads right about, squads left front into line, etc. In about 3 minutes, 109 men were marching in one direction, and I was marching away from them at an angle of 40 degrees, all alone. "Company, halt!" shouted General Littlefield. "That man is the only man who has it right!" I was made a corporal for my achievement. The next day, General Littlefield summoned me to his office. He was swatting flies when I came in. I was silent, and he was silent, too, for a long time. I don't think he remembered me or why he had sent for me, but he didn't want to admit that. He swatted some more flies, keeping his eyes on them narrowly before he let go with the swatter. "Button up your coat," he snapped. Looking back on it now, I can see that he meant me, although he was looking at a fly, but I just stood there. Another fly came to rest on a paper in front of the general and began rubbing its hind legs together. The general lifted the swatter cautiously. I moved restlessly, and the fly flew away. "You startled him!" barked General Littlefield, looking at me severely. I said I was sorry. "That won't help the situation," snapped the general with cold military logic. I didn't see what I could do except offer to chase some more flies toward his desk, but I didn't say anything. He stared out the window at the faraway figures of co-eds crossing the campus towards the library. Finally, he told me I could go. So I went. He either didn't know which cadet I was, or else he forgot what he wanted to see me about. It may have been that he wished to apologize for having called me the main trouble with the university, or maybe he had decided to compliment me on my brilliant drilling of the day before, and then, at the last minute, decided not to. I don't know. I don't think about it much anymore. I've done all the damage I could do here. Thank you for listening. Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel arranged, produced, and performed most of our music. Mr. Ray was on the guitars, bass, and drums, and Mr. Chanel handled orchestration and keyboards. Produced by TKO Brothers. Other music, including some of the Beethoven compositions, were arranged and performed by the group No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN2, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. Our satirical and pithy musical comments are by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. Our announcer today was my friend Larry David, and you know what that means. Everything else was pretty much my fault. Well, that's Countdown for this, the 222nd day until the 2024 presidential election, the 1,179th day since dishonest J. Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Use the 14th Amendment and the not regularly given elector objection option
Use the Insurrection Act. Use the justice system. Use the mental health system to stop him from doing it again while we still can. The next scheduled countdown is Tuesday. Bulletins as the news warrants. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.